So good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and Paradigm Shifters, to me, Veronica Entwistle, are people that are making a difference in the collective of our species at this turbulent time of change. And tonight's Paradigm Shifter is a very exciting woman, Suzanne Eder, and she has been trained at the Barbara Brennan School of Healing, is a life coach, has written a book called 10 Ways to Find Peace Rather Than Panic. Hello, we need those. Maybe I even need more than 10. So welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful to have you, and I know you started out in the corporate world. So what made you shift out of that?
I did indeed. And what made me shift was this inner call, truthfully. I graduated with high honors with degrees in accounting and economics, and I just marched headstrong into the worlds of accounting and finance. And literally, my first day on the job, I realized I didn't like it at all.
Why didn't you like it? Tell us why you didn't like it. I think that's interesting.
You know, that particular not liking it was because I started my career as an auditor. I don't know if you're familiar with auditing as a profession, but you're literally checking the work of other people.
Right, okay.
And it just...
honest, right?
Exactly. I just didn't like any piece of that. Back at the time, before I was consciously on a spiritual path, I was thinking in terms of, wow, I'm not adding anything to the GNP, you know, or the GDP. I'm not adding any value. And it really was deeply frustrating that I wasn't doing something I felt was meaningful. But, you know, I had the 4-year degree. I was pursuing a CPA. And so I kept trying to make it work. And I just kept trying to find different positions within the corporate world that might be better suited to me. So I ended up migrating from strict accounting into financial analysis, stayed there for a long time, and then ultimately over into human resources, because by that time I realized I really loved working with and through people, but never quite found my fit. And the thing that stands out in my mind even now is right around 1990, I believe it was, I had started on my spiritual search, and I had discovered Shakti Gawain. I don't know if you know who she is.
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah, and, you know, I was reading her books, and I discovered that she was going to be speaking at a local conference here on the East Coast.
And she's kind of she was one of the big people who ushered in creative reality, right?
Absolutely, yes. She was really at the forefront there. And I loved her books, and so I attended this conference where she was the keynote speaker. And when she walked on stage, I had one of those moments. I looked at her, and I could not just see her. I could sense and feel her. I'd never really noticed someone's presence. You know, she was so at peace, so completely with us, so loving. And in that moment in me was awakened what I call my longing. I wanted to be that. I wanted to be her. I wanted to have a life like that. I wanted to be helping people the way she was helping people. And I wanted to have that state of being that I sensed. And that was, you know, that awakened in me this longing to do what she was doing, to teach, to write, to help people. And once that longing was awakened, it wouldn't be ignored. And now, believe me, I tried to ignore it for many, many years. You know, I did. That's not practical, blah, 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 blah. You're an accountant. So I just kept pushing it down. But what I've learned about those deep soul longings are, you know, they will not be ignored.
And it's funny because I'm often telling people that we can't be attached to our identity or you'll miss, you know, if you don't go deeper than that, you miss who you really are. And you've just given us a perfect example of that.
Exactly. I'm an accountant.
Yeah, right. I'm an accountant. Yeah. That's right. I'm a financial analyst. We don't do these things.
Right.
So, yeah, that particular moment was, you know, a real turning point for me, even though, again, I slowed myself down considerably. And it wasn't until years later when I discovered the Barbara Brennan School of Healing and gave myself permission to actually attend that I started to think in terms of not why it couldn't work, but why it could.
That's great.
That was, you know, that was a huge shift for me. I can remember going to another workshop that Barbara Brennan was leading, and afterwards we stayed after to learn more about the school itself. And my initial thought was, why am I bothering to listen to this? I'm not going to that school.
And she signed up.
Yeah, why not? Why aren't you going to this school? Why wouldn't you go? So I, you know, and that in that moment was born within me this new capacity I had for challenging my own thoughts.
That's wonderful, isn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And she's really famous, for people who aren't aware of Barbara Brennan, she's really famous for Hands of Light, that book that really is still teaching a lot of people.
Yes, Hands of Light. Her second book was Light Emerging. She's written several since then. But, she was a NASA physicist, but was also a gifted reader and perceiver of energy. So her school was really an intense four-year program in mind, body, spirit, health, and healing.
Did you love it?
It depends on which part of me you're talking to. I loved it, yes. It was life-changing, which was intentional.
Did you work in the corporation whilst you were attending the school? Because it's a mentoringship and distance school, isn't it?
The way the school is structured to accommodate people who are working, so what you do is you go away to the school for these intense class weeks 5 times a year. So, I was working, so I used all of my vacation time. Hmm. To actually go physically to the school, and then, of course, between the class weeks, you were given mountains of homework to do. And you were required to be in therapy. It was a very intense healing journey for the students. So it was very much confronting all of your stuff so that you could connect more deeply with the truth of who you are and be a clear and loving channel for your clients.
So did you continue from there? Then you left the corporation after the 4 years and started working as a healer?
I had a couple of fits and starts. When I first graduated, I was still working in the corporate world, but I left as soon as I could and started my own healing center.
Oh, good.
With a partner. But that was yet another example of still not being fully self-aware, because what I did was I jumped into business mode. Mm. We put together a business plan. I put together a business plan. I arranged the financing. I ended up being really the director of operations of a business. And I missed the fact that what I was longing to be was the healer. So I was still kind of wed to that identity that you mentioned earlier. I was still, even though I'd gone through 4 years of a healing school, I'd been in the corporate world for so long. That's how I knew myself.
And I guess those of us who have been in the healing world for a long time would have been very grateful to have somebody in the accounting, financial world balancing a healing center, right?
Yeah. And they were. The practitioners that we had were grateful. The piece that was missing was me, a real honest self-awareness that, no, this is not the role that I want to play. I really want to be working with people directly. So we closed the healing center. I actually went back into the corporate world for a while and then left again. And when I did it the second time, which was in 2003, I founded Solid Ground, which is the name of my company. Hmm. And I knew then to start small, to start from where I was, and to really, really listen to myself, to really let my longings lead the way.
Hmm.
Which
and how's
is an
it
amazing
been?
Theme of my work.
And, first of all, my Solid Ground, is that also a center or is it a website?
It's not. This is the name of my practice. It's called Solid Ground. The website is My Solid Ground. Hmm. And I named it that as a reminder to me, really, to always stay grounded, but also it's meant to reflect the solid ground of our being, the need for us to really connect deeply with who we are and to live from that place.
And you use a lot of meditation for that, or what do you use?
Yes, meditation is pretty central to the work that I do. I also, when I work with clients now, it's either in person or it can be by phone, and it's very much a dialogue process. It's a process of inquiry, but because of my training, I also bring in various healing and meditative techniques, depending on what's going on, with the client. So yes, in terms of helping people to connect with their ground of being, meditation really is the primary means to do that.
Hmm. And you do a lot of energy work, do you?
I do some energy work. The energy work that I was trained to do was actually work with a client on a table. I do very little of that.
Hmm.
And because what I discovered over time working with clients was the part that I loved was when I was talking to them before and after they got on the table.
You little Gemini, you.
I know, exactly. I loved, explaining things and answering questions and offering new perspectives and actually teaching. So the work evolved to be that, to be a teaching and a mentoring and a coaching.
I love this book, 10 Ways to Find Peace Rather Than Panic. A mutual friend of ours sent me this book, and that's why we got you on the air, because it's a very enticing book, and it's also preciously simple. I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
And it's maybe you want to talk about it to people, because the little subtitle is When the World Has Gone a Little Crazy.
Yes.
And there certainly is a lot of turbulence and turmoil, and the systems are, a lot of us want this, I believe. The systems are crashing and burning in many ways, aren't they?
They really are. And, you know, for those of us familiar with the concept of ego, as Eckhart Tolle uses that word, you know, this, the ego-based fear-based structures, they have to collapse ultimately. Mm. But it's scary. It's very disorienting when everything that we've known is suddenly disintegrating. And in fact, I did write this. It was in the spring of 2009, which was about 6 months after the first major financial collapse of the markets.
Mm-hmm.
And people really were in terror. And so I was writing this just as a service to my clients and to myself, frankly, just a reminder of what I deeply know, really wanting people to appreciate that this disintegration, this crumbling of the known is essential in order for us to create something deeper and newer and more authentic and better. And so as scary as it is, it's a natural and expected part of the creative process.
And I notice you start at the book, the first chapter is Make Peace with Fear.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, those of us who've been steeped in metaphysics for a long time, we're not supposed to fear. And it's pretty hard when you're losing your home and your job and your identity on every level not to have fear. How do you make peace with it?
And this is an area that I really do treasure the training that I had at the Barbara Brand School, because I'm very aware of there's a way of understanding how things work that says don't even allow fear into your consciousness. Don't give it any quarter at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be tremendously effective if you can actually do it. Like if you can actually do it in a clean, if you're standing truly from a center where you simply can disallow it. Most of us aren't quite there. And so...
Well, sometimes the fears come up faster than you can say whippersnapper, that's for sure.
Exactly. And so they just are. They're there. And it's what I was offering in that particular chapter was, first of all, the recognition that we typically respond in one of two ways. We either collapse into the fear, like we believe it. We think it's what's true and real, and we collapse into it.
Oh, my gosh, we're doomed.
Oh, my God, we're doomed. Exactly. Or we go the other way. And we try to kind of, you know, steel ourselves and just, we try to ignore it. We try to just, you know, by golly, I'm stronger than this fear. So we kind of use a lot of willpower, do our affirmations, do all these things that we know to do. But again, if we're not really solidly in that place of no fear, it's going to be tapping us on the shoulder. But wait a minute, the world's crazy. You're not going to make it here.
Mm-hmm.
So the perspective that I'm offering in terms of making friends with fear is just that it's neither an enemy to be defeated, you know, nor is it, you know, somebody that we need to actually cave into. This is just a very misguided way of responding to a change in circumstance. So if we actually can turn to face it, put some space between us and it, and get curious about it, we can start to disarm it.
I'm just watching inside going, disarm it. I think that's really good. It's like with The Secret, many of us have talked about this a lot, there isn't the acknowledgement of the emotional underpinnings that can mess up your affirmations, is there?
Exactly. I refer to that. Yes, I teach this a lot, because a lot of people that come to me have been working with affirmations, but they're not really working. And it's because they're using affirmations as a paste over. They're trying to paste over their fears.
Right.
And, you know, the more effective way to deal with fear is to meet it and then reach underneath for the deeper truth. But before we can reach underneath, we have to actually face it.
So you just sit in it? What do you say to people?
So, there's a couple things that we can do. One is purely, I'll say, energetic. You know, mm-hmm. as you're saying, sit in it. Allow the waves of emotion to come without collapsing into them. Now, this takes some practice. I mean, this is something that would ideally be done with a healer or a good friend or a coach, is to so you don't feel terrified. Like you're literally sitting in the sitting in the emotion of it. Mm-hmm. And what we learn about emotion is it does have a cyclical. It's like a wave, and if we can allow the wave to come in and to go, then in the clear space we can reach for the deeper truth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one practice that we can engage in. Another is to really get out a pen and paper and give the fear a voice. Let it tell you what it thinks.
My
God, this is terrible. You know, we're going to hell in a handbasket. I'll never find another job again. If you actually give voice to the fear, then you can, now you've created a little bit of space. Now instead of it being inside of you, it's on a piece of paper. And now we can step back and really examine, is this true? Because what most often creates the emotion of fear is some kind of a belief, some kind of a thought we're holding, like, I'm not going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I'll never find another job. Or I'll lose all my retirement savings. Or there's some, you know, there's some story that we've built up about the circumstances, and the story is creating tremendous fear reaction in us.
And a part of it is again an attachment to that identity that we thought was us, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So this takes courage. There's no question. This process takes courage.
It takes courage to feel your fear. I like that. It's paradoxical.
It is. It is. But if you're willing to really examine, so what is it that I'm believing to be true about myself, about the world, and is it really true?
Mm.
And even if you think it is true, it's a good discipline to say, all right, so what else is true, or what am I making this mean? Like, okay, it's true I got laid off. That's a true statement. But what am I making that mean? Am I making it mean that I'll never find a job again? Am I making it mean that... you know, that I'll never get paid what I need to earn. Like, what am I making this mean?
Or it's a judgment by God or something.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. That's a big one that
by
people,
the universe,
especially that are studying the law of attraction, they keep trying to look at everything through the lens of, how did I attract this? What's wrong with me?
Yeah, what's wrong with me? That's really interesting. The other thing that I find is interesting in metaphysics is we keep hearing that everything is an illusion, or that reality is fluid and flexible. But somehow, as you're talking about feeling the fear, I'm going, somewhere we should be able to use that as well, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That's one of the stories that we tell, that it'll always be this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, however it is that we're feeling now, if we can create enough space, internal space, to really examine and remember that this too shall pass, that everything really is flexible and fluid, and we're co-creating moment to moment to moment.
So we're homesteading our reality.
Say that again. I love that phrase.
I just said homesteading our reality.
We're homesteading our reality. Ooh, I like that.
Well, and I'm just being playful with it, but I notice you have some really wonderful, I really like this book, but I can't actually quote it, but I am looking at the table of contents, and you have a wonderful for example, how do you really listen to yourself? Don't we deceive ourselves a lot? Aren't we perched on all kinds of self-importance based on certain reality things?
Yeah. Either self-importance or the opposite, this exaggerated self-doubt and self-judgment. And, this piece that we're talking about right now, to me, is sort of the real heart of how to find peace rather than panic.
Mm.
It's learning to listen, to recognize and listen to and honor the voice of our deepest truth. Because generally the panic arises when we're listening to some other voice. And so this, listening to the inner voice, is essential in finding peace. And it's not easy, though. As you're saying, you know, we have so many voices.
Yeah, I was just going to say, which voice? I've had people say to me, which voice? How do I know?
How do I know? And there's a real art to this, and it literally takes practice. One of the questions that the teachers at the Barbara Brennan School of Healing used to ask of us over and over again is, how do you know that you know? Because so much of the healing work is also, you know, highly intuitive.
Right.
And they wanted us to be able to distinguish between what we were intuitively perceiving as opposed to what we might be projecting or assuming. Or so how do you know that you know? And that's a question I always ask my clients. Just imagine that you can literally turn up the dial of your self-awareness. And as you listen in to what's going on inside your mind and your heart, start to really get a refined attention to how does this particular thought feel in me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm holding this thought. How does it show up? Where does it show up? How does it feel? And what I've noticed is that our true guidance is almost always accompanied by some sense of either freedom, peace, or spaciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's neutral. It isn't, hey, let's do this. Not that we can't have inspired ideas like that.
Mm-hmm.
But guidance itself is often very quiet. And it feels a certain way in our bodies, like you get a certain sense of where it lives in your body. So yeah, this is a real journey of self-discovery all by itself, this art of learning to really listen to yourself.
And they call it the still small voice, in the olden days anyway, hundreds of years ago, eh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I still call it that. I think it's perfect.
It is perfect.
that's what it is.
And it is small. Sometimes it's so wispy.
Yeah, yes. So yeah, we have to practice. We have to practice listening to ourselves.
So when you work with people, do you then move? Like if they discover where it is, for example, in their body, you said, where is it? Do you use energy to move it along so they can access more easily?
I just guide them in connecting more deeply with that energy,
mm-hmm.
learning to really recognize it and value it. And so... you know, I'll often ask people, you know, in between sessions, to do specific exercises where they sit down with a question that they want an answer to. They need to make a choice of some kind in their lives, and to sit, literally sit, and open to guidance, and then to write about it, to literally write down, here's what I got, and let me just have a kind of an inner dialogue, but have it be on the paper as well.
Mm-hmm.
So to find ways to listen and consult the inner guidance.
Can you think of any people that moved through some big changes that are kind of exciting? Like, it's interesting to me, you said you had a beckoning from spirit, or you had an awakening that came from deep within, and it took you quite a while to manifest it. And I was telling somebody recently that a lot of people who have had major near-death experiences, for example, take 10, 12, 15 years for it to emerge in their life, right?
Mm.
It's not unusual for it to take a while, is what I'm saying.
It's not. It's not unusual at all. And, of course, now, you know, the more we begin to recognize those kinds of messages, impulses, promptings as being authentic and genuine, then the more we can act on them with greater confidence and trust. What's coming to my mind in this moment is an experience I had. You know, I'd gone back to the corporate world, as I said. I closed my healing center and went back into the corporate world, but I still was committed to doing this work that I love, and just wasn't sure the how and the when. And I was in the corporate world, and I was here actually in my home, and I had just finished working out, and I looked out my window, and I could see the city skyline from my window, and I could see the building, the corporate office building where I worked at the time, and it literally appeared to me as if there had been clouds that then started to clear away.
Hmm.
And in the clearing, I heard inside a voice that said, "Now is the time to leave."
How wonderful.
And it came in just the way that I was describing. It was just a singular thought, not a lot of fanfare, no wringing of hands or gnashing of teeth. It was just, now is the time to leave.
So what did you do with that? Did you feel delighted? Did you feel like, huh, did I really hear that?
It was so clear. There was nothing to do but accept it. Of course, yes, this is the truth speaking to me.
And were you ready for it? I mean,
not in any real way. I hadn't made any plans. You know, I hadn't, out in the waking reality of my life, I hadn't known when I would leave the corporate world again. I just trusted that I would know when the time was right, and sure enough. And so literally the next day I went in and submitted my resignation.
Oh, neat.
And
how did that feel?
Day,
were you relieved then? I mean,
I was relieved, although the next day I was back in terror. I was like, what have I done?
There's no net under my tightrope.
Yeah, what helped me through that was was recalling that moment and that guidance came in. And it's, you know, one of the questions I ask myself now is, so if I'm doubting, you know, if there's a voice saying, what have you done? Like, which voice am I going to trust? Am I going to trust that small voice that came in with such peace and such certainty? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to trust this doubting mind? So, I mean, believe me, I did go through, you know, quite a bit of worry and anxiety and not knowing, because I hadn't put any plans in place, really.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people think that worry afterwards negates it. You know, I talk to lots of people who are going, well, then I realize that I must have been deluded, or I wouldn't have had that problem, you know, of the fear.
I know. See, isn't that, this is how we derail ourselves.
Yeah.
When really, this is the journey. The journey is, even with the fear, coming back always to, how can I love myself through this? How can I empower this longing? How can I honor and move forward on this inner guidance? And so facing the fear is an act of tremendous self-love.
Great. I love that. And this book is so short, but so pithy. I mean, I really, because when you're facing the fear, and then you say, turn off the TV. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, this is one of a bit of a pet peeve of mine. Like, you know, as I think most of us would agree that the mainstream media tends to be, you know, very addicted to drama and negativity
and fear.
And fear. It's coming from primarily a fear-based structure. So, you know, when we're
get fed, those chemicals going in people.
Oh my goodness! I mean, literally, I really do think we have a responsibility to ourselves to be very mindful of what we're taking in, not just, you know, what we're eating, but taking in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, watching a lot of TV, especially a lot of news stories and, you know, horror stories, it's going to do nothing but create a lot of static and fear that'll impede our ability mm-hmm. to move forward from a place of peace. So, I always encourage people, just, you know, use your highest level of discernment to decide what you're going to read and what you're going to listen to, and be really firm about listening only to that. Turn everything else off, because it's just going to keep us small and stuck and afraid.
Mm-hmm. That's true, because I think it runs, it etches into the brain so that we end up running programs that we didn't choose. We didn't choose consciously anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're talking from there about grounding, getting grounded in the groundless.
In the groundless. Getting grounded in the groundless.
Well, I'm thinking of your solid ground, the name of your website, and I'm like, okay, this is perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Although, I guess it can be a bit confusing, because what I'm really saying is there is nothing solid really in this universe. Even matter isn't solid.
Right.
So we have to find our grounding in the groundlessness of it all. And that's sort of the paradox here, is that when we step into uncertainty, we're grasping, we're looking for something to clutch onto.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, what we're being called to do is let go, to surrender to this groundlessness so that we can create. Because this is what the creative process demands, is that we go back into the void, the place where all emerges.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think having a spiritual foundation is so deeply, deeply helpful. If you have a sense that there is more to life and to who we are than what we can see and perceive through our five senses, that we're more than our bodies, we're more than our thoughts, if we can really hold an intention to connect with the divinity within and all around us, that can provide a source of comfort that nothing else can.
So that's the groundless ground.
That's the groundless.
It?
That's
yeah.
The groundless. The divine.
I agree with that. So what do you think is happening? Like, there's this turbulence and turmoil we're talking about, and people are being called upon, as you're explaining and you're helping them, to get grounded in the groundless or the divinity. What do you think is happening in the collective? Do you think that it's moving, you know, the collective consciousness of all of us as a species, our dharma, our collective dharma? What do you think is happening?
What I'm holding as a belief and hope, perhaps, is that we really are moving into a higher level of consciousness, that what we're witnessing in terms of the turbulence is a falling away mm-hmm. of the fear-based structures that simply have to fall away in order for this higher level of consciousness to emerge. And I think that our responsibility is to maintain this clear intention, to be in this higher state of consciousness, to really listen in to divine intuition to guide us. Because that is, in fact, what creates the expansion of consciousness.
And it is kind of contagious, isn't it?
It is. It is. The more of us that are committed to focusing our attention this way, the more likely it becomes the consciousness can shift.
It's like we can adapt to higher frequencies faster when they're coming at us all the time, eh?
Yeah. Yes.
So what is Solid Ground about? Your website. What goes on there? I love this book, and we're going to go back into the book. It's an everyday hero's survival guide for uncertain times. What is your website like? If you could tell us.
My website is a place for people to come and meet me and the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the website, I have. Audio clips from interviews I've done or classes I've taught. It has descriptions of the basic areas where I focus in my coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And it has things I've written. So articles I've written for magazines and just for my blog, of course, itself. So it's a way for people to get to know who I am as a teacher and healer and coach and see if they might find some support there. And I want the site itself to be a place where people can perhaps get a new perspective, think about things in a different way. So even if they never call me or coach with me, the site itself is intended to be a place where you can go just to get some inspiration, to get a new way of looking at things, to find some support and some comfort. And, of course, it's also there to offer specific workshops and classes and coaching programs that I run.
What kind of classes do you run?
You know, right in this moment, in the middle of kind of revamping a lot of what I've done, I'm going to focus back in on my core, which is really supporting people in this career piece,
mm-hmm.
Really helping primarily women who feel a conflict between following their longings but yet paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Help them resolve that conflict.
Isn't that a horrendous thing? Isn't that just like the great gap these days?
I think it is, and I just feel like there's such a need to support people here and help them find an authentic way,
mm-hmm.
their authentic way, to follow their longings and still have food, you know, have a roof over their heads and food on the table. And so a lot of us see that as an either or, you know, it seems as if when we're in the corporate world, we'd be crazy to leave, that there's no way we could support ourselves, make that kind of money. So we tend to stay there. Or the other side of the spectrum is people leave knowing that their souls are longing to be free, and they kind of flounder not knowing how to make money.
Right. And then there's a lot of self-judgment in the middle of that, too.
Oh, tremendous self-judgment.
Well, what do you think is happening? Like when the systems are breaking down, and a lot of what we've heard is, first of all, that vibrations are moving way faster, so change is available at a faster rate. And the second thing is that we're going to move into a better kind of a community consciousness again after being rugged individualists. What do you think of all that? And do you think that, I'll just stick with those two questions for now.
Do you know, I think that's probably, that feels right to me, although I'm no expert. I'd like to think that that's what's happening, that literally we are in a phase where the vibration is being elevated, that it's easier for people to lift consciousness and to recognize inherent oneness,
mm-hmm.
and to live in ways that honor that, rather than, as you mentioned, the separatist, individualist way that's kept us, that's been so damaging on every level, environmentally, physically, spiritually. So I do believe that this is the opportunity we have in front of us, that with the such obvious breakdowns, we have the opportunity now to see more clearly who we really are and what's possible to create. And I know there's tremendous momentum building, you know, people like Barbara Marx Hubbard and the Shift Network, and there's all kinds of, you know, globally organized networks of people coming together who are committed to creating a sustainable, spiritually conscious world.
It's very exciting on that level, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
So
it
even
really
for oil, for that whole problem, alternate energy, you called it sustainability, that is a really exciting subject, talking about community consciousness and ways of energizing and fueling our lives. How do you think that's coming? You think that's going to be possible to get by the moguls?
I do. And yet I have to say that my personal area of service tends to remain with the individual. I do deeply believe that everything you're talking about is possible. It doesn't seem easy. It seems like there's a lot we have to overcome. But personally, I'm still committed to helping people within themselves overcome those same inner barriers that we see reflected in the outer world.
Mm-hmm. I'm in full agreement, actually, and sometimes it's overwhelming to see it one at a time. But we are such an energy, what is it? We are so connected energetically that just working on one does actually move the group, doesn't it?
I believe it does.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I think that if we don't really stay committed to our own inner healing, moving toward wholeness, then even when we act in the world, you know, we may take action in the world to form intentional communities and to do all these things. But if we're still doing that from a place of, I got to fix it, got to change it, everything else is wrong, if we're still doing it from a place of holding judgment,
mm-hmm.
then we're not really shifting consciousness.
No. And I think you're right. If you find your real self, I mean, if you find, who was I talking to? Chris Griscom of the Light Institute, we were talking about, and she said, the true self will actually always be in a state of change as well. So there you have your solid groundlessness.
Exactly, the paradox of groundlessness grounding.
And it is, it is all a paradox, but as more and more people find their real or access to or appreciation or evaluating of the true self, then there isn't really any competition, is there?
There isn't.
Isn't that amazing?
There really isn't. And the other piece that I really believe fervently is there's this aspect of our being that at the Barbara Brand School was referred to as our longings. And these longings, I really do believe, are the gateway between the unmanifest and the manifest world. And
I mean, they steer our ship in a way, don't they?
I'm sorry?
They sort of steer the ship, don't they?
They do. And that's their whole purpose. That's right. Their whole purpose is to steer the ship. And when we honor that, we honor the longings within us, you know, this is the divine expressing through us. This is how the divine wants to be expressed through us.
Mm.
And it's when we honor that, we're serving the whole in the way that we're called to serve the whole. So, you know, I think if we can learn to do that, then what needs to be done in the outer world will naturally be done. Like I have several clients who are passionately committed to things like environmental restitution, and that is their longing. You know, this is when they get in touch with themselves. This is what they most want to do, is to be of service, and to be of service in a way that really brings them joy and fulfillment. So I think it's a beautifully designed system if we can let it be what it is.
Well, we have to reevaluate. I mean, isn't everything looking at reevaluation right now? What is real value? You know. But I want to ask you something about your childhood. Do you have any awarenesses from your childhood? Some people don't, I realize that, of your own longings. Do you have a connection between being a child and your longings and what you're doing now?
That's a good question. I can distinctly remember as a child just being a seeker. Like I really was always had this deep sense of, wow, there's something here, you know, there's something bigger than what I'm seeing in school. I just always wanted to know the truth. I had this deep, deep longing for the truth. On a more kind of practical level, I used to love, you know, playing school, playing teacher when I was a little girl. So I really did think I was going to grow up to be a teacher. And back then I was thinking of teaching in a classroom, but what's evolved is that I'm teaching in a different way. I'm teaching, you know, at a different level, and it's all about this opening people's perception of who they really are. So, you know, again, when that Shakti Gawain moment was when I got to understand that teaching can take so many different forms, and that's the kind of teacher I want to be.
I love that, you know. So you knew when you were small that you really had to take some role.
It felt that way to me. I think, I guess that's pretty common. I really did feel like I was supposed to do something pretty important.
I don't know if it's pretty common. It is. It happens, especially in the kind of people that are doing the wonderful work you're doing, you know, making a difference in the collective. Yeah, and Okay, as far as with your coaching, I think what I'd like to know, or maybe you could tell everybody, what are the points that you bring up in coaching? I've heard of all different kinds of coaches. What is it you do? Is it partly the Barbara Brennan work and the...
Well, the Barbara Brennan work is the foundation. That's the formal education and training I have, and it's really as a healer. So my coaching is really a form of teaching and healing and mentoring. That's fundamentally what it is. And so I support clients. Again, my primary focus is in supporting women who really do feel this conflict between following their longings and making good money. Find an authentic way to do both. So that's the central, that's the main focus of my coaching.
And you don't work with many men?
I have worked with men, and I'd love to work with men. My ideal client is someone who is very open to this spiritual intuitive process that I use, and it tends to appeal more to women in this moment. But I speak mostly to women in terms of offering my services. Enlightened men are welcome.
Men of the feminine side. Well, there's this whole thing about the emerging divine feminine. Are you experiencing a lot of that in women? I mean, that's part of it, isn't it, that we can reevaluate, what would you say, the nurturing qualities? How would you put it?
I think that's right, the nurturing qualities, as well as just the understanding, deep understanding of relationship, that, you know, really women bring a whole different way of relating to the world. I think we're more understanding of that the creative process naturally happens from the inside out, whereas the masculine view is more structural, and it's looking at things from the outside in, like what can we move around to create this effect. I think the divine feminine brings in this really deeply innate understanding that creation, not building, but creation happens from the inside out.
Yeah, it's sort of like the two would be different interpretations of the word power, really.
Yes.
You know, empowerment or power of our lives.
Yes.
And I'm seeing that women are, we're trying to come out of, say, the patriarchy, or we're trying to come out of the trances we've been in collectively, aren't we?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. I do. And I know this is probably a quote that many people have repeated, but not too long ago the Dalai Lama was reported to say that the Western woman will save the world.
Yay! I think we heard him say that when we went to see him in Seattle.
Yeah, I just think that's, and when I reflect on that, I think, well, you know, it makes, at a certain level, it makes sense, because the Western woman, you know, we've been learning that we have learned the masculine way. Like, you know, we've taken on a lot of these masculine qualities because we thought that's what we had to do to succeed.
So, especially in the corporation, Miss Suzanne, hey?
Especially that. But we're still female, so I think we now have kind of this more complete balance of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we can be way showers. We can stand and say, this is what it's like to be whole, to really value the masculine and the feminine. And of course, because the feminine's been undervalued for so long, there needs to be, you know, an emphasis on the feminine power.
Well, also, I think it was Lazarus who said that it would also be the older women who are going to really lead the parade in change. Well, I like that idea.
I like that too, now that I'm older.
But when you think about it, I mean, here you've had the corporate experience and so on. What kind of family do you come from? Were your parents for this kind of thinking, or did you have to break free from the family paradigm?
I'd say a bit of both. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, they were raised at a time coming out of the Depression they were raised with a certain way of understanding what it means to succeed and to be safe in the world. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that I have challenged.
And you had to take it on a little bit to challenge it, right?
I did. I actually took it on quite a bit.
Yeah, but you know, I think that's...
You know, I just happen to be blessed, even though we don't see eye to eye. Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably a part of at least, you know, of them that thinks, oh my God, I think she's crazy. But fundamentally, they really love me, and I think they have tremendous respect for my being willing to make a stand for what I do believe.
Well, in a lot of, yeah, and you really are doing that, but in a lot of your coaching and, you know, a lot of the growth factors we see, half of it, if not more, is breaking out of the, what, the unique family lineage paradigm anyway, isn't it? It's kind of
it
breaking
is. I have to agree with you. When I'm working with my clients, it's so fascinating. You know, even those of us who are adults, right, in our 40s and 50s, we're still, in many ways, constrained.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
By, you know, what the ways that we were brought up to believe and actually still wanting to please our parents. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, my father would be so upset. I mean, even adults. So.
I know in my mid-60s, I was doing that about my dad. Oh my gosh, if I tell my dad what I'm doing, and I went, come on, you know, he may not even care anymore.
I know, right?
It's not, that is the program, isn't it?
It really is. It's so amazing how deeply embedded it really is.
Oh, my gosh. We're very complicated beings, and I know we can be infinitely freer, but it's a big job, isn't it?
It's a big job. It is a big job. It is. That's why, you know, that's why I do the work that I do, why you do the work that you do. We can't do this alone. Like, it's just too much ask of someone.
Or having to hold hands through the ethers. What about children? Do you ever work on children with children?
I do not. I really don't. I've not been drawn in that direction. Mm-hmm. I know others are, mm-hmm. and I think that's wonderful. You know, I guess I'm tending to help people undo, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the conditioning that they've taken on by the time they hit adulthood.
Well, you actually look like a very powerful bridge of ways of being, so people can go from these different security bases into more true to who they are. Right? You look like you're really quite excellent at that.
Oh, thank you. That's interesting. That word is used to describe me quite a bit. One woman said, "Joy, you're a great bridge from the mainstream to the metaphysical." And it's like, yeah, that's it. And that is what I want to do. I want to call people that are still a little bit stuck in the mainstream or corporate mindset and feeling depleted and soul starved. You know, call them with a sense of there is more. And for those on the side of already on a spiritual path but kind of floundering in this material world, call to them and say there's a way, to be in this material world and to be supported.
Mm-hmm. What about businesses and so on? Do you see new businesses rising in your field of connection? You know, do you see, you know what I mean? Do you see new businesses arising on this model, this kind of self-truth model, self-investment?
You know, I need to look more for that. I know that there are companies that are becoming more progressively minded and more spiritually oriented. Since my work, again, is primarily with individuals, what I tend to see more is the entrepreneurial model, people that mm-hmm. are, you know, stepping out on their own to offer a service that's heart-centered, soul-centered. And so I haven't, you know, I don't have a lot of information or data around trends in businesses in general.
I don't know if they're really trends yet, just like the groundlessness isn't really a trend yet, is it?
No, that's probably true. Although I'd like to think it is starting.
I think it's bubbling. I think it's bubbling into the collective, frankly. That's how I like to envision it anyway.
One of my clients discovered this really wonderful, I guess really a teaching and consulting organization, and they've developed a process called Holacracy. So they do go into companies and help them organize and operate from this holistic, circular-oriented premise as opposed to the hierarchical command and control.
Wow, is that known as a conscious business, or is that...
I'm sure that would be fall under the umbrella of conscious business. Unfortunately, I'm not an expert on it, but it's just knowing that it exists, knowing that there are dedicated, intelligent, loving people that are actually committed to shifting our corporate paradigm, I think is just tremendously uplifting.
And you mentioned Shakti Gawain, and she was involved in writing a book with Mark Allen. And Mark Allen finally, and through a series of intuitive hits, started his own publishing company, and he runs it to today.
Yes, this he does.
You know him.
New World Library, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that he's a pretty good example, I believe. I don't really know him very well. He's been on the show a few times. you know.
Yeah, in fact, my current plan is to submit my next book to him.
Well, if it would make sense to me. I mean, you're really aligned with him. But he has a really fun way of talking about, you know, I'm a little lazy.
I know. I love that about him, too. I love that.
Do you know him personally?
I know I don't, but I've read a couple of his works, and I think that's really
well. The whole thing about you've got to be strident, you've got to be aggressive, you've got to elbow people out, and all that. He doesn't do any of that.
That's right. That's right.
And I love that. And the people that work for him all own his company, right? They all own the company.
Oh, I didn't know that. That wouldn't surprise me, though. That's interesting.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, just like people at home, to realize that there's a lot of new modeling of some of these concepts that you have about being able to support yourself in a way that's true to the self, eh?
Yes.
Mm.
And there's another wonderful resource right there on the West Coast in Oregon. There's an organization called the Heart of Business.
Oh.
And founded by a Sufi master, actually, and a fourth-generation entrepreneur. And he's very devoted. His whole business is devoted to supporting other businesses in operating in a heart-centered way, and you know, being profitable, but also never losing your integrity.
Well, that's interesting. And I was following somebody, I won't mention names or anything, on LinkedIn, who's involved in Hollywood and productions and so on. And I noticed that her credits were all kinds of companies that were producing film that are all light-based companies.
And wonderful.
And I met her about 7 or 8 years ago, just for a little while, and we kept in touch a tiny bit with email. But that was one of her goals. And she said, Hollywood, there's so many metaphysicians just coming out of the closet there, you know, or people who believe in the integrity of the person. So we should be able to see that in the movies.
Yay, yay, yay. And we need it.
So you
can turn the TV back on.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to be careful, like you say, although, you know, it's good to peek in every now and then, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. So you give talks, and you've written articles in a magazine called Living Well. Is
Living
that still
Well,
going on?
It's a regional magazine here on the East Coast. And I wrote a column for that for 5 years. I've recently just concluded that 5-year run, so I can focus more on my own blog and my books and so forth.
And what's your blog? Is that Solid Ground?
It's right now. It's called Grounded in Spirit. It's currently it's a Blogspot blog. So it's groundedinspirit.blogspot.com. And I write about living a spiritually conscious life in this material world. I'll be migrating that to my website shortly, but for now, that's where it is. And, of course, I hope people will visit the website, which is mysolidground.com.
Okay. And I want to have the name of your blog again. It's Grounded in Spirit.
.blogspot.com.
Okay.
Yeah, Grounded in Spirit, all one word.
Now, tell me about a blog. Is a blog actually a running... you can tell I've had computer problems, right? Is it a running kind of a commentary or discussion about your own discoveries and journeying and so on? Is that it?
That's basically is what it is. I tend to use mine a little bit perhaps more formally. I mean, I do share personal experiences, but I write posts that are more like articles, so they're a little bit, you know, they're offering spiritual principles, and I do share stories from my own life, from my clients' lives. So, yeah, it's a way to say kind of on the ground, you know, here's what it looks and feels like.
His real life in the trenches.
His real life in the trenches.
In the groundless trenches.
Yeah, because I've dealt with subjects like procrastination, perfectionism, you know, of course, fear. So I try to offer a perspective of here's how you navigate through when you're really committed to living a spiritually conscious life in this material world. Here are some of the challenges that we all face.
Oh, wonderful. That's really helpful for people. I just know, as I told you, when I sent out the flyer about talking with you, I had a number of clients say they were so excited just to hear some supportive information, because it's really hard to stay grounded right now.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I have to say something else that's kind of funny. I have been deeply influenced by a number of spiritual teachers, and I've met a lot of spiritual teachers doing this radio series. But it's interesting, so many of them came out of the corporate accounting world.
Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know whether it's because it's such an extreme, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's
isn't that funny?
It just becomes almost untenable for the soul to stay there.
But it's a really good it's really good training for you. But it is quite funny to me because you're saying, like, who would have thought? And I'm going, yeah, I keep hearing that one. Who would have thought?
That is interesting.
I know. We need to think about that. And of course, numbers are mystical, and numbers are anyway. We'll talk about that.
Well, truly, there's actually a real beauty to accounting. I mean, there really is a beauty to it. It's a very elegant system. So I've had to relearn what initially drew me to it, because I'd gotten so cynical and depleted by the time I left that I wasn't fond of anything that had the word accounting or finance in it. But there is a way to integrate the two worlds.
Yeah, and it isn't unspiritual to keep ourselves financially organized.
Not at all. Not at all. Beautifully said.
It has been such a delight talking to you. I feel like just sort of relaxing and going on for hours, but of course we'll get hooked off stage here, you know.
Yeah. Well, if I have a moment, I did want to let listeners know that I do have a limited number of free coaching sessions available this month in July.
Great.
So if anyone will be interested in speaking with me for a 40-minute session, I would welcome that opportunity.
I think that's wonderful. I might even take you up on it.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So
my email address is on the website, so they can go to the site and then just, you know, hit the contact us and email me if they'd like to schedule that.
And very quickly, it would be like people who really don't know how to take the next step or have the courage to make changes, or what would it be? Or would it be people?
Yeah, people who are, yes, you know, either already in transition or wanting to make a transition to a more deeply fulfilled life and just not sure even how to start.
Well, what a gift you're offering, Suzanne.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And this has been such a pleasure, Veronica. I've really had a good time on this call.
I've had a wonderful time. So I have to say goodnight to everyone, and thank you so much for listening. This was Suzanne Eder of SolidGround.com, and I know that you'll be in touch with her for your free coaching sessions.
And the website is actually MySolidGround.com.
MySolidGround.com. And I've just enjoyed it, so we hope you'll come back again.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good night, everyone. Good night, Suzanne.
Good night.